If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
I'll be honest, at about 2:50-whatever p.m. yesterday, I had the thought, well, it's going to be weird to do the Josh Briscoe show after a Chiefs loss. However, I watch the games in my basement this year, and then after the game goes final, I haul up the stairs to get to my office where I cover all the post-game action, watch the press conferences, all of that for ChiefsOnSI.com. I'm really bad at reminding to tell people where I write now. ChiefsOnSI.com. I did not even stand. I was still fully seated as the final field goal was about to be snapped, kicked, and ultimately, of course, blocked. But I did have the thought of, oh, well, I don't really feel anything fundamentally different about the 2024 Kansas City Chiefs right now. Losing to the Broncos in a divisional game at home, I never thought this team was going undefeated. So, you know, that sure is a disappointing way to go. But I'm not panicking. I don't know that anything has changed with this team. We're just going to have to talk Chiefs after losing for the first time this season. But I was in no hurry to begin my move up the stairs from the basement. And I have a sneaking suspicion that most of you weren't either. Welcome in to the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. James Howell producing the effort on the other side of the glass. Nick Price still back there after yet another immaculate Kingdom show. Good work, Nick. But I have to think, and this to me is the most incredible evolution over the last 10 years amongst Chiefs football. There are a lot of them. Super Bowls, plural, playoff wins, many, many, many playoff wins, elite quarterback play. A lot of things have changed in the last decade of Chiefs football. You can cut it off at the beginning of the Andy Reid era, or really, no matter how old you are, as long as you're older than, let's say, 8, if you're younger than that, it's got to be pretty close to bedtime, right? If you're old enough to be listening to the radio at 7 p.m. on a Monday night, you probably remember Doomsday. Every day was Doomsday, every Sunday at least. That noon Sunday kickoff, that was familiar. But that was the only part of yesterday's win over the Broncos that felt like an old school Chiefs game. The fact that it kicked off at noon in Arrowhead against the Broncos. That could have been true any number of times over the last several decades of Chiefs football. But the names were different. The records are different. The circumstances are very different. Even the Broncos' uniforms are different. And if I may, in the safety of Chiefs Kingdom, if I can say something that I truly do believe that may end in the station getting rushed with the pitchforks and torches this weekend or this week, I do think these Broncos uniforms are an improvement on the set they just had. They're not as good as the throwbacks would have been. They should have gone all the way Orange Crush era. They should have had the D with the horse blowing smoke out of its nose on the helmet. But this is an improvement over the previous sets they've been wearing for the last, well, since the kind of the beginning or the end of the Elway era, right? I do think the Broncos have improved their uniforms. That's one of the only places they've improved in recent memory, though, and that rules. But as it ticked down to the final moments of Chiefs-Broncos yesterday, I wouldn't begrudge you if this wasn't true for you, but it was true for me, and I think it's true for a lot of Chiefs fans who are in a very, very different place than they were at any point within the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Before that kick was kicked, you at least thought about it, right? You at least, for a second, had the thought of, I don't know, man. They play a lot of weird games. Weird things happen, and they haven't lost yet this year. I'd be really, really surprised, and feel free to text it on this. I'm going to try to, I got the text lineup again this week. I'm going to try to get a few participants and a few back and forth to the text line, 913-586-7965. I bet very, very, very few of you, if any of you, turned off your TV before the ball was snapped. That used to be a go-to move to protect your own sanity. Hey, listen, Chiefs have been getting either the snot beat out of them or generally haven't been very successful throughout this November divisional round game. It's 2012, 2002. It doesn't really matter. Pick a year. This was a close game. But the Chiefs are just cursed. I don't need to watch the final kick. I'm going to go start mowing or whatever your activity was to get away from some of the worst games in your Chiefs past. That is completely, completely gone now. Of course, and as it should be. Super Bowls, plural, in triplicate, in fact. A three-peat in the conversation. You'd be a fool to walk away from a Chiefs game before the clocks hit zero. And frankly, you'd be a fool to walk away before the head coaches shook hands at the 50. Because things happen with no time on the clock. Things happen in overtime. Things happen, period. Before, during, and after the games. Things will happen, and by and large, the Chiefs have been on the right side of that so many times in this Mahomes era that it's easy to forget how real the curse felt. For so long. We'll get more into the nitty-gritty of several things in this game. I want to talk about the ups and downs of the left tackle position, mostly downs. I want to talk about the ups and downs of the cornerback rotation, mostly downs, with some interesting nuggets you may not have seen on first watch. We'll break it all down as the show goes on. Harold Kuntz of Fox 4 will be our guest at 8 to talk about what he saw out there at Arrowhead yesterday. But this is the fourth edition of the Immaculate Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. I think I've talked about this in some form, maybe every week to this point. And it's not redundant yet, because it keeps taking different forms. And I'm not bored of it yet, because I don't think anybody totally understands how it works yet. But when we say things like, find a way to win, that feels like something, but often isn't. You know, what is clutch? What is being able to pull it out in big games? What is it to snatch a victory from the jaws of defeat from an organization that so often felt like they did the exact inverse, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory? The blocked kick... Again, more details and more of the specifics of that. We'll talk about that next segment. But the blocked kick, I think, is a combination of two things. I think it's that sort of ethereal, hard to pin down, finding a way to win. And the other... is one of the factors that frequently leads to you having success in those big moments. Preparation. The Chiefs have different examples and different versions of this all of the time. But I can't think of a better one than what we saw yesterday. Preparation and finding a way to win, putting that in air quotes. One is concrete. One is vibes. And I think they both matter. When you see things on film, you find tendencies, and then you're able to exploit those. Again, I'll explain some more of those if you haven't seen or heard them yet so far, of what exactly the Chiefs saw and did on that field goal. Or should I say, on that field goal attempt. You have to have the things to work on. Then you put in that effort, and then you hope that your luck and your opportunity come together as the beneficiaries of that preparation, and then you make the play. That's, in so many ways, what sports is built on. Finding a way to win sounds like something you stumble into. It's not. It's about your players. It's about your talent. It's about your execution, your discipline, your preparation. But I really do think both of those factors matter in tremendously real ways. Because to the best of my understanding, having never been a pro football player, much to many of your shocks, I'm sure, or a pro athlete, or even a very good football player, I think it's easier and more rewarding. I think the journey is better to be on as you prepare, believing that you will, air quotes, find a way to win. I think it's easier to exert yourself in the playbook or running through film, or a different example entirely, DeAndre Hopkins getting up to speed in this offense for his first Chiefs game a few weeks back on, 3 days of prep? I say this complimentary in no way to denigrate that DeAndre Hopkins was dragging his feet in Tennessee. I don't believe that he was in any way whatsoever, so don't take it that direction. But I bet DeAndre Hopkins had 3 more intense and fruitful days of learning and preparation the days leading up to his Chiefs debut than he did at any point this season in Tennessee. Not because he's not locked in, not a professional. He absolutely was. He absolutely is. But because, now you're in Kansas City, and you had a chance to get on the field. And on the other side of that field for you, metaphorically speaking, is a championship. Your first, in fact. For Leo Chanel, I don't think that dude needs a whole lot of extra get up and go. He seems to have that in spades. Death row on his arms and muscles and in every place you could try to attach them to a human being. Leo Chanel's going to get there. But when the entire team has learned, not guessed and not wondered and not even believed, this team has learned, especially over these last 2 seasons, that weird things will happen. Weird games will be played. Mistakes will come and go. Seasons probably won't be perfect. But when it's crunch time, Patrick Mahomes is going to make a play, or Travis Kelce is going to make a play, Chris Jones is going to make a play, or you know what? Maybe I'm going to make a play. We do a lot of talk about organizations and culture, and it's worth doing, but it's difficult because we're not really in there. I have to imagine that every player who sees the field for the Chiefs right now has the thought that somebody here is going to make the play, and it may as well be me. And time again, they've done it. Preparation, the vibes of finding a way to win, concrete hours in the film room, feelings on game day. It's an emotional sport. It's also a mental sport. We all know it's a physical sport. Those things all coming together for me, by the way, is why football and professional football in particular, it's sort of an aside. I love and respect college football in its own way. But professional football is my favorite thing in the sports world by a million miles. And in a game that the Chiefs needed a last-second field goal block in to preserve a 16-14 victory, whereas the two teams clawed their way to combine for the 30 points the Chiefs put up on Tampa Bay last Monday. It all came together. It's all so deeply intertwined. It's all quintessentially Chiefs football. And I wouldn't have it any other way. We'll check out some texts. We'll take a little bit of a closer look at the field goal block. We'll talk about the left tackle position, some names being thrown around, even Andy Reid being asked about one of those names in particular today. We'll break it all down as we go here. Harold Kuntz of Fox 4 will join us at 8. We're hanging out until 9 o'clock here tonight on the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday nights starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5, The Fan.
Despite the fact that I absolutely am sticking to my guns on the fact that I was not convinced that game was over until the clocks hit zero and the Chiefs were victorious, I didn't really think that we'd spend the second segment of tonight's edition of The Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5, The Fan, talking about field goal rushing. And I've been playing a lot of College Football 25. I may need to talk more about my dynasties as the show rolls on. We'll see how we go. But no matter how much effort I put in, I don't think I've ever successfully blocked a kick or a punt of any sort in that game. Maybe I have a few things to learn. Some funny stuff has revealed itself since the Chiefs made that block yesterday and sent the Broncos home sad and sent themselves to an undefeated 9-0. I've watched the replay of this a million times. The entire right side of the line in particular is just hilarious. Justin Reed gets a great get off around the edge, which I think Andy Reid mentioned this today in his presser too. Justin Reed gets a great get off around the edge, and so the edge blocker there really has to devote to him to make sure he's not closing out around the outside. And then you have, I believe it's Karloftis, Chanel, Jack Cochran, or Cole Christensen. You know what happened to me there, right? You know, 43. There's this whole white wall on the right side. Okay, we just call it what it is. And they all come caving through as Reed on the edge gets his leap, and Derek Nnadi in the middle. This Derek Nnadi was the piece of this that was the most confusing to me at first, but then again, Andy mentioned it during his presser today. Derek Nnadi hits the deck, and it's like, oh, did he just, like, slip and fall? But as Nnadi goes down, comes the blocker across from him with him. So they both go down, and Leo Chanel, this, in a sport exclusively played by aliens, this superhero among aliens, men among boys would not suffice. They're not boys playing NFL football. This superhero amongst superhumans, Leo Chanel, bowls over his blocker, rebounds to get up to make the block. Karloftis was there as well. And that's where the play gets made in such a blink of an eye. The Broncos' operation was good. Snap, hold, kick all seemed pretty good and pretty quick. It was Jack Cochran, by the way. Got to stick to my guns on that. But the crazy thing, Nnadi pulling his guy down, Reed getting a good jump off the edge, Cochran and Karloftis getting great pushes. Those are all huge, huge individual plays there. And then Leo Chanel does the most physically impressive thing that anybody did on the field there on that play, maybe throughout the game, I don't know. Bowling his guy over and getting back up to make that block. That is talent, execution, incredible physical tools. That's how that play gets executed. You need the luck, and you need all those pieces to come together at the same time. But, it wasn't the first time it had happened to the Denver Broncos. Not like that. In fact, it wasn't even close. Story from Andrew Mason, DenverSports.com. I'm going to just read you a couple of paragraphs here. Because the story is extremely well set up, and if you haven't heard or read this yet, I think you're going to be overwhelmed with something between glee and amazement. By Andrew Mason, DenverSports.com. Will Lutz didn't have much of a chance once Leo Chanel knocked over Denver Broncos offensive lineman Alex Forsythe on a fateful field goal attempt as time expired Sunday at Arrowhead Stadium. When it left Lutz's right foot, quote, it felt good, the veteran kicker said in the hall of the locker room after the Broncos' 16-14 defeat to the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday. But it didn't stay in the air long. Kansas City defenders Leo Chanel and George Karlaftis attacked Forsyth, knocking him over in place kick protection, and Chanel blocked the 35-yard attempt. It wasn't the first time Forsyth had been knocked down. In fact, in the Broncos' last 10 place kicks, including extra points, opponents forced him off his feet 8 times. Going to repeat part of that. In the Broncos' last 10 place kicks, opponents forced him off his feet 8 times. Carolina did it on all 4 extra points in Week 8. Baltimore got to him once last week, and the Chiefs did so 3 times Sunday, once on the Broncos' second PAT, then on both field goal attempts. A line between Mike McGlinchey and Matt Peart, Forsyth found himself at the point of attack Sunday, and according to Chanel, it was something the Chiefs planned from their film study. Chanel and the Chiefs felt, quote, the bull rush would work, noting that in the area protection scheme, the Broncos had a player who was, quote, light on his toes. Andy Reid said, we get to see that every day, meaning in practice, we work that block and that last final shot there. This is the payoff of the thing I talked so much about the first segment. Sometimes success feels like luck. Sometimes luck feels like execution. Sometimes luck is planning. And in the NFL, to be an undefeated 9-0 football team, you need all of those things to come together. But when I talked about preparation and finding a way to win, the concrete execution things and the vibes, that was all true before you even knew that they have been scouting this on film, that they worked on this in practice, and that they were ready for a situation where if they said, we need to either steal 3 points, maybe it's to stop a game-winning PAT, or maybe it's something we just want to try to execute when the Broncos are trying to tack on 3 points. It's going to give our offense a chance again. It ended up being the most high leverage of any of those potential outcomes for the Chiefs. They had to stop that kick to win the game. So they went back to what they had prepared on from the film. They executed it tremendously across that entire pass rush. I think 10 guys were moving forward while Nick Bolton was kind of holding the middle there. And now they win the game. They're undefeated because all of that came together so perfectly. So when people say, and many of these times it's tongue-in-cheek and it's good-natured and all of that, I think I've said some version of it. When people accuse the Chiefs of selling their soul to the devil, whatever black magic or dark rituals, whatever people ask the Chiefs may have done to get to this point, you're able to just tell them, actually, they saw that on film. Unless the devil told them there was a real exploitable part of the Broncos' kick protection, I think that's just good old-fashioned scouting and then a little dose of Leo Chanel. It's really a remarkable thing, and I didn't think we were going to have this much fun talking about what went right for the Chiefs as things were getting a little bit bleaker later in that game. We will talk about some of the drawbacks. We will talk about some of the things that didn't work on offense and why that actually was. Plus, I'm going to read some texts when we come back as well. 913-586-7965. It's the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5, The Fan.
Leo, what do you bring to the table for the kingdom?
Violence and physicality, man.
Yeah! That's it. I am addicted to hitting people. I love it. I can't get enough.
Violence and physicality from Leo Chanel. Asked and answered, he made that promise before he ever put on a Chiefs uniform. He has delivered on that promise many, many times since. It's the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. Take some text from the text line here, then we'll talk a little more about left tackle, cornerback, some other interesting things from this game. I'll tell you what, we're going to have no problem getting to 9 o'clock tonight. Plus, Harold Kuntz of Fox 4 will join us at 8 o'clock talk about his view from the entire ordeal. 913-586-7965 for the text line if you'd like. Got one earlier. Austin from MNU. Shout out to my friend Austin from Mid-American Nazarene. Nice to hear me on 96.5. Now appreciate that, Austin. And he said that as every Chiefs fan should have dialed in at this point, weird things happen. Do not turn to red zone until that game is at zeros and until quarterbacks and coaches are shaking hands near the 50. Dan from KCK, good to hear from you again. Went to Power and Light. I imagine that P&L was a little bit of a rough place to be for a little while, and then an absolutely amazing place to be as you got right there close to 3 o'clock. So good to hear from you, Dan. And then a text from 620 saying they're enjoying the show. They did put an E at the end of Briscoe. I'm just going to point it out so I can also tell you if you want to get in touch with me across social media, it's at JB Briscoe, no E, JB Brisco. I've been on Twitter for a very long time. I'm trying Blue Sky now, trying Threads now, and seeing which of those apps are just most generally functional, I would say. None of them are great. Appreciate that from the 620. Taking a little more of a psychological view of where these players are at. I enjoy doing that because I think the psychological thing of everything is interesting. Everybody's got something going on in here, and how do you figure out how to turn that into performance on Sundays or Thursdays or Mondays or Wednesdays or Fridays for the Chiefs this year as well? Also from from the same 620. Until the next game starts, anything can happen. And this Chiefs team proves that. I cannot disagree with that because if you believe you have seen all that the 2024 Chiefs have to offer, I would tell you to go ahead and stay tuned. You may have a few surprises still coming because I just imagine that we're going to continue to see, you know, weird things, weird games. And a weird team that's going to have a chance to stay undefeated with a win over the Buffalo Bills. We may get to that towards the end of the show. A heck of a test for both of these teams, honestly. An interesting couple of stats. Actually, you know what? Let's go. I'm looking at the clocks here. I'm glancing around. I'm looking over at James on the side of the glass. I'm looking back at the time. Let's talk about left tackle. I'll get to some of the things that the left tackle issues unveiled. Six 620 texter has respected that there's no E at the end of Briscoe. Thank you, texter. I appreciate that. So Wanya Morris has been, all right. We've been fine. Not great. Not a total disaster. Wanya Morris, starting left tackle, this team, fine. Maybe trending in a slightly wrong direction. But he's been okay. And I never appreciated okay more than I did when Kingsley Suamataia was forced back into action yesterday. Kingsley was not fine. Kingsley was unfine.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanses and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
The Chiefs traded up for Kingsley in the late second round, last year's draft, this most recent draft, second round pick. And I still think, as of right now, gun to my head, I would say, I think the Chiefs see Kingsley as the best case scenario starter week one next year. I think Wanya Morris, who played some last year and played okay and got kind of baptized against the Raiders. Again, he's been a little bit shaky since the Raiders game this year. He's been good enough. Last year, Donovan Smith was good enough when he was out there. Played the majority of the games, missed some time, came back for the playoff run. More on Donovan Smith in a second. But the thing that I didn't expect to see from Kingsley, and it's not an ideal circumstance, it's coming in, you know, preparing as the backup throughout every week since week three. Obviously, Kingsley got to start the first 2 weeks, got pulled late against the Bengals, and hasn't, he's had a couple of snaps here and there since, but he hasn't retaken the job since then. I was curious to see what Kingsley would look like. I'm not going to say I was like glad when Wanya got hurt. Obviously, I wasn't. But when he went out, I had the thought of like, oh, this is kind of like I'm a little bit nervous. But maybe this is an opportunity for the rookie to show what he's learned in these 8 weeks or so on the sidelines and working in practice and in the meeting rooms and all of that. Maybe we're going to see something, some growth from Kingsley here. He had a pair of the worst, quickest outside losses I've maybe ever seen. He got a good chip from Travis Kelce and then lost to the inside. Like he couldn't catch the defender after Kelce chipped him so hard. Kingsley was doing the one thing that a left tackle really can't do for this team. And we saw it in some ways with, I don't even necessarily think this is true for like Eric Fisher. So I'll say we saw it in some ways for Orlando Brown. We certainly saw it with Donovan Smith and Wanya Morris. You just can't get in the way of the rest of the offense. You can't be the weakest link. You can't be the thing that short circuits what the offense has to offer. And Kingsley did yesterday. So there have been plenty of conversations and plenty of questions asked about what about Donovan Smith, who's still a free agent, and what about David Bakhtiari, the former Packers left tackle, who's also still a free agent. I think one of those guys, I believe, makes a lot more sense right now than I thought he would have 8-10 weeks ago when Kingsley got pulled before the season, training camp, whenever, 2-3 months ago. And one of the guys makes still as little sense as I thought it did a couple months ago. Sorry, we just got a text that says, loving me some Josh Fesco show. Keep up the good work. Papa Bob must be proud. Briscoe. No relation. I mean, as far as I know, I guess. I don't know the etymology of our names. Maybe we share some ancestors. Thank you, Texter. That's very funny. So let me tell you why I don't think the Chiefs should even should call David Bakhtiari, Bob Bakhtiari, Josh Bakhtiari, none of the Bakhtiari family. Here's the issue with David Bakhtiari. He's 33 years old. He hasn't played a 16-game season since 2019. But Josh, they don't need him to play 16 games. That's true. But he's played in just 13 total games from the 2021 through 2023 seasons. That's one game in 21, 11 in 22, one in 23. That game was September 10th, 2023. He hasn't played professional football since then. His upside has been enticing. It's just not going to make him suddenly healthy. All those injury woes have undercut his upside there. So even for a team that is relying on Kareem Hunt and DeAndre Hopkins, veterans who have brought a lot to this offense, those guys have brought something that Bakhtiari can't bring. Reliability. Stability. Availability. Nothing personal with Bakhtiari. I just don't think he solves that problem. Donovan Smith might. I think if the Chiefs call Donovan Smith tomorrow, if we find out that he, you know, signs the practice squad to get up to speed and then hops into the active roster, or just sign him straight to the active roster, whatever, it would be pretty damning for Kingsley. It would be a rough go for his confidence that he was so bad in his sort of second chance, if you will, in his rookie season. The Chiefs signed a veteran that he was drafted to replace because you could not even live with the idea of Kingsley Suamataia being a left tackle in a playoff run. That's bad for his confidence. That's a bad look for his rookie season. I get that. But I think playing some bad football and maybe being the reason that Patrick Mahomes gets his block knocked off in January, I think that'd be worse for his confidence and worse for the team. I think if Donovan Smith was on this roster tomorrow, I think Wanya Morris would and should still get the first chance to keep the left tackle job. But Kingsley is also the backup right tackle right now. Got a text, a couple of texts in about Jerron Taylor and Joe Tooney. Joe Tooney might be the best left tackle on the team, but I think at that point, then you're putting Mike Caliendo at left guard. I don't think that's solving that problem, and I think keeping the interior together, I just think that's something that the Chiefs and Andy Reid are not wanting to shake up. Similar with Jerron Taylor to left tackle. You can move Jerron Taylor to left tackle, put Wanya Morris at right tackle. It doesn't make any of their lives easier. In fact, it just makes both of their lives harder, in my opinion. You'd be making both tackles switch sides midseason. Right tackle's not that much easier than left tackle. You're not getting extra production there. You have to have two good tackles, and Jerron Taylor's been good on the right side. I wouldn't want to change that at this point. But if Donovan Smith is on this roster, and let's say even if Jerron Taylor were to then get hurt, then maybe Wanya has to go to the right side so Smith can stay at left tackle, which is, I think, the only place he's ever played throughout a long NFL career. Certainly the vast majority. I can't remember if he spent a couple games at right tackle early on in Tampa or what, but he's a left tackle, and you don't want to teach a 31-year-old new tricks if you can help it. As I'm approaching that age, I really actually believe that even more. But I think Donovan Smith could provide you the flexibility and the stability and the reliability of knowing that if Wanya Morris gets hurt in the conference championship game, that suddenly Kingsley being out there and changing your offense for the worse that's not a gamble worth taking if you can avoid it. And I think Donovan Smith has a reasonable answer to that. As long as he's not sitting there on his couch saying, I'm only coming back if you guarantee me the starting job, which would be navigating from a place of unemployment. I don't know if that's if he has a lot of leverage there. And also, it's kind of what the money's for, right? To be like, hey, man, we're going to pay you like a decent little chunk of change. You have a chance for another Super Bowl ring. You may have to play. You may get to play. I don't know. But we would like to have a little bit of redundancy at left tackle right now, and the Chiefs don't. So I am not interested in Bakhtiari. I'm a little bit interested in Donovan Smith. I was really interested to see what Kingsley was going to look like when he came in yesterday, and it just went so poorly that I have pretty much snoozed my rookie check-in clock to see what he looks like next year in training camp. And I don't know if he'll be able to go into that with if it's the same battle, if it's Wanya Kingsley again, if you try to add more to it, if Ethan Driscoll, who's sort of their developmental redshirt tackle right now, he's been a healthy scratch every week this year, but he's on the active roster. I don't know how far out he is in the developmental process. I don't know when Chu Godrick is going to get the call up from the practice squad. He's their international player, so he gets an extra roster spot exemption. I don't know what 2025 is going to look like, but right now I think there's one player that you could reasonably add to this group who would alleviate a little bit of that problem and would raise your floor, and that to me would be Donovan Smith. I don't think he steps right in and starts. I don't think he and Wanya Morris really change. I don't think they're different enough right now to change what the Chiefs' offense looks like, but I do think that's where I would look first. If the Chiefs right now are as gun-shy about Kingsley as I am, and I certainly wouldn't blame them if they are. A couple of interesting stats from yesterday about the Chiefs' offense, some things that did not go so well as the offensive line as a whole, including the interior for stretches, had a relatively rough game. We'll talk about that on the other side of the Josh Briscoe show. That's right. The texter says they were kidding. You can claim that if you want, Texter, but I can never really know for sure. It's the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to the Josh Briscoe Show, Monday nights starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
The Chiefs are still undefeated. Who was nervous? I wasn't nervous. Who was worried? Nobody was worried. Maybe a little bit. It's the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. James Howell on the other side of the glass. I am, of course, Joshua Briscoe. A couple of stats that I heard just a little earlier today over on the Athletic Football Show. Robert Mays delivered the stats. So if you don't like him, you can take it up with him. He does a great job. That show's great. Two stats that I did not realize were factual from the Chiefs game yesterday that I think puts two of those offensive issues that we talked about a little earlier, or maybe take some of the, shows you the symptoms of the issues we talked about earlier. Patrick Mahomes, per Robert Mays, was pressured on 50% of the Broncos' non-blitz pass rushes yesterday. So Denver got more pressure when they weren't blitzing, which is interesting. Pretty damning to the offensive line, being able to just defend a four, or to, you know, block four. And not surprising, because Mahomes is so quick and so decisive and so good against the blitz. Why would you blitz Patrick Mahomes? I don't know. I don't know who keeps doing that. Why would you do that? But being able to get to him without blitzing, every quarterback is worse under pressure, and every quarterback is definitely worse under pressure when you get to drop as many guys as you would like to in coverage. That's concerning and a little bit of a left tackle issue. But again, Broncos pass rush is good. I don't know if I've just said that flatly yet. They do deserve some credit there. I think the Broncos might end up being a playoff team. Probably a playoff team that's going to get the bleep beat out of them again by the Ravens in the first round or whatever, but perhaps a playoff team. The other thing from Robert Mays, another stat that's maybe even more telling, that's a part of this game we really haven't talked about very much, or I haven't talked about or written about or thought about very much until I heard this. The Chiefs running game, while not explosive, it's been very successful this season. Per Robert Mays, the Chiefs running game has been third in the NFL in rushing success rate this year at about 47.5%. Slightly less than half of their runs have been, air quotes here, successful. That means that, you know, a one-yard run on first down is unsuccessful. A one-yard run on third and one is successful. It's a better way of judging it than just, you know, yards per carry, because it does evaluate considering the context of the situation. Useful, useful stat. So third in the NFL in rushing success this year, around 50% of the time they are successful. But on running back runs against the Broncos yesterday, the Chiefs' rushing success rate with running backs was 19%. 19%, as in 1 under 20. A fifth of the Chiefs' runs were successful for a team that's been closer to getting about half of their runs moving successfully. And that's even with, like, for all of the issues that Kingsley Suamataia had, he's been pretty good getting out in space in the running game, although I think he may have actually had a bit of a blunder in one of those plays as well, now that I say that. One of the sort of big screens off to the left, I think he may have even run into Humphrey. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head. But the offensive line struggled to run block. They struggled to pass protect. And you saw that turn an interesting and consistent Chiefs offense, if not an explosive unit, turned a consistent and successful Chiefs offense into a bit of a blundering unit for a good portion of that game. A huge part of that is the fact that Patrick Mahomes missed two touchdown passes. Obviously, the one to Travis Kelce in the back of the end zone, you've seen him hit what feels like 100 times, probably not quite. And the one to Xavier Worthy, last week, Worthy took one of those passes out of bounds, couldn't keep his feet in. We talked about that last Tuesday. Yesterday, Mahomes just missed him. The wind might have caught the ball a little bit, I don't know. And figuring out how Patrick Mahomes' base is working right now with an ankle injury that he definitely was hobbling on a little bit at times yesterday. I don't know how he's driving the ball or landing on that front foot. I'm willing to give him a little bit of wiggle room there, because your feet matter to play quarterback. If he hits Xavier Worthy and if he hits Travis Kelce in the back of the end zone, this offense has a much better day. The vibes are very different, and it doesn't come down to a last-second field goal. But he didn't. And sometimes Patrick Mahomes can miss, be it an overthrow or a missed deep shot. We'll talk about the misses and the block and much more with Harold Kuntz of Fox 4 next in the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to the Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Hour number two of the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. Thankfully, I don't have to do it alone. Not that I ever really have to do it alone. James is right over there, DJing, hitting the buttons, keeping us on air, timing me out, making sure I don't say any curse words that get out over the airwaves. Shout out to James Howell over there. I'm Joshua Briscoe. But our guest is Harold Kuntz of Fox 4. You can see him there. Number 4 on your dial. Number 1 in your heart. Harold, good to talk to you, brother. I appreciate you making some time for us here on this Monday night. How are you feeling after what I have to imagine was a pretty high-octane work day yesterday?
So, you know, it was interesting. You know how when we go down, we're about to go into the locker room or the post-game room, and you're down there. They tell you to get down later, like 5 minutes when the game's about to end. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we get there. We're in position to get in the little line or whatever, and we're all sitting there like, oh, Denver's going to win this game. And there's like a little 3 to 5 second delay between the crowd reaction and then what you see on the televisions up there. And all of a sudden, you hear a huge roar. And you're like, did they block this? And you watch, it's like, you've got to be. And then I just said about 3 or 4 cuss words in a row. As you said, your producer over there making sure you don't cuss. I had to make sure I wasn't cussing.
Yes.
I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, what is up with this team, Josh? The team should be 5-4.
Yeah.
Even Coach Reed afterwards, like, yeah, I mean, he was like, you know, as for the game, so some things to work on. I'm like, yeah, no, yeah. I'm sitting here about to put together stories, and I went to my photographer, Brian, and I told him, I'm like, I feel bad for you, man, because you just shot like a full 3 hours of footage, so I'm going to use one play over and over and over again. I was like, no. One of these stories is going to be like, no, this was not legitimately good, ladies and gentlemen. There were things in this performance that were poor.
Yes.
Like, we missed Xavier Worthy on a sure touchdown. We missed Travis Kelce on a sure touchdown. The defense in the second quarter, I've never seen Trip McDuffie not look like not at all pro before.
I know.
I was just like, what are we doing? And then, you know, Leo and George, and honestly, Cole, Jack Cox, anybody could have blocked that kick.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, you know, but credit to the special team staff and Dave Toe for knowing that the left guard for Denver is going to fall on his butt literally every play. You know, they got it. So, and the inevitability rises again.
It's so incredible, and you guys made lemonade out of it, by the way, because I liked the opening shot of the package that you tweeted out as well, of you just standing there at the hash mark on the 25, and hey, everybody, right here at this patch of grass, this had a football laying on it a couple hours ago that we thought was going to give the Chiefs their first loss of the year, and that's not how it went. You can see that on Harold's Twitter as well, at Harold R. Kuntz 3 on the website formerly known as Twitter, and as we all watch those embers burn. But one of the things that I've tried to understand and break down more for myself, and I'm really interested in where you kind of go first on this, because I think you think about stuff in sports on this level too. When we talk about inevitability or the Chiefs devil magic or the fact the idea of finding a way to win, every team wants to win, and every team tries, and every team has professional players, and every team prepares and all of that. So I think sometimes, you know, finds a way to win can kind of cover up a whole lot of things we don't really understand. Watching and covering this version of this team in particular, this team, as you said, is like 4 separate instances of being an inch away from being 5-4. What is air quotes here, finding a way to win mean for this team? Where does that come from as no one in this sport gets to produce anything like a perfect start to a season?
Well, 2 things. 1, like, you talk to those guys in the locker room, and the first things they always mention is like, well, it's just a culture of winning. Like,
yep.
And you kind of have to believe them in this sense that, like, that's all they know right now. I mean, we're going on 15 win games in a row here, which in the NFL is like, it's supposed to be impossible.
Yeah.
And they're making the impossible possible. So at this point, they're just like, yeah, we'll just go up there and block the kick, and then we'll go home happy. Like, yeah, that's cool. But, I mean, another thing, though, I think if we were talking to, like, it was either Mike Pinnell or Mike Dana. I can't remember. They sit in the same area of the locker room there at Arrowhead. And one of them was basically saying, like, man, this is the most people y'all going to get after a game ever. Everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Like, we're more than happy to talk to you about it, because I'm like, they knew they weren't supposed to win that game. Like, you watch those guys walking in the tunnel, like, even Patrick Mahomes, he walks through the tunnel, first he just shake his head and starts, you know, high-fiving people. Like, Andy Reid, usually after a win, the kids, the grandkids or the kids would come up to say hi to Uncle Andy or Grandpa Andy. Like, no, there was none of that. They're like, they weren't prepared for this. They weren't prepared to win that football game. None of the family members, people were in shock. Francis Tiafo was not prepared.
Yeah.
Flavor Flav was not prepared. Taylor Swift and crew were not prepared to win that football game. So it just goes to show you, like, yes, there's luck involved in anything. But, like, I sat there like, man, boy, this team needs a bye week. I'm like, that already happened. It's over. They have to play next week.
Yeah.
And then the following week. And then after that, then they have to play like every other week of the day except the eighth day of the week. So I'm trying to take a step back and say, okay, I left with much more answers or non-answers than answers.
Yeah.
Like, we could sit here and talk about how Kingsley Suamataia, who you went to St. Joe, I went to St. Joe, we saw enough practice to know, like, oh, man, this could probably, I mean, you know, this could be a couple, you know, curves here, but this guy could probably be the left tackle of the future. Mm-hmm. They're just, that's what they're telling you, and that's what they're going with. And now we're sitting here watching Donovan Smith have memes on Twitter like, yeah, yep. I'm sure. Yeah, sign me up, coach. I'm rested. I'm ready. I'm like, that's all you can do. Sometimes you just have to step back and just have to laugh at this, because you're just like, this is the hope you have is that it doesn't burn them later in the postseason,
right?
Like, when the luck runs out. That's really the biggest hope. That if I have any real concern right now, it's that, like, this is all fine and dandy, but you don't want to have this happening when you're going 9-0, you know, 10-0, 11-0, 12, whatever happens, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, good, divisional game, we're going home. The luck ran out. Like, that's so, like, because it reminds me a lot of that year. I think you might remember the year that the Patriots were the one seed overwhelming favorite, and the Jets came to town. All of a sudden, you know, Bart Scott became a celebrity overnight.
Yes.
So you don't want that happening to them. But at the same time, you're just like, hey, I'm just going to let it ride, see what happens.
And they have more ways to keep that from happening to them than any other team does, because they do have a quarterback who seems to become something nearly perfect on third downs, even as the offense struggles. But even that perfect quarterback, as you mentioned, missed two touchdowns yesterday. I want to talk about
the 60%. Yeah, 60% third down conversion rate right now. Like, it's insane.
It's unbelievable for an offense that has been successful but hasn't been explosive. Yesterday, the running game was not successful. I just read this stat last hour, but that Robert Mays said that the running back rushing success rate yesterday was 19% after they were averaging 47.5% through the first half of the season. The thing about left tackle and the idea of that luck running out, the thing that I don't know is I don't know if the Chiefs win that game. Not that the offense ever did a whole lot, you know, post Wanya's return. I don't know if the Chiefs win that game or how many games the Chiefs win going forward, or if they come back against Cincinnati in week two, if Kingsley is still out there. And I'm still a little bit bullish on the idea that maybe next year's training camp is another one of these battles where they say, hey, he's got a year under his belt and he can, like, reach to his left now. I don't know. But it was so hard to watch yesterday that I'm not interested in David Bakhtiari. I am a little interested in Donovan Smith, because right now, if Wanye or if Juwan Taylor gets hurt, Kingsley's the only other tackle who's active on game days right now. Where do you settle in that mix? Is Ethan Driscoll's on the...
Well, Ethan Driscoll and your boy Nate Taylor, you know, whenever we pass by him, we say the same thing every time. We're like, that is an incredibly large human being.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Like, how did he go to the Marshall? Like, what happened? Where's 247? Where are these people? Where are you? Do your job. But every time he passes by, he's like, hey, how you doing? Like, oh, my God.
I was like, hello, giant man. When are you going to be ready to move your feet fast enough to play left tackle?
Please learn footwork. Sir.
Yes.
But, I mean, obviously, the quick point is Joe Tooney moves to left tackle. Caliendo moves in there.
Yeah.
You move, hopefully. That could be interesting. I think Andy Heck will be practicing that. because that has to, you know, no stone has to be left unturned here. So that will be practiced, I'm sure. Wanya, I talked to him in the locker room, man. He said, like, you know, man, it was all God with the knee. I'm like, okay, when you have a knee problem, you don't say it was all God. That means there's something wrong.
Yes.
And that is of the highest respect to our Lord, our Savior.
Sure, but I don't want him being the thing that's holding your knee together, man. I need something more confident in that.
Yeah, there does need to be some, you know, muscles that keep that thing attached and everything. And I mean, like, and God bless you, man. I mean, I was actually telling my wife earlier that I heard Trey and Wanya singing Going Over Yonder. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, hey, if God's on your side, that is great news for you guys. Because, like, I mean, but the fact that Andy Reid had to walk over there literally after every offensive possession and basically, like, have the look of him, even for the press box, you could tell, he looked at him like, how may I help you? Like, what can I do?
Might that help?
Can I be of service? Who needs to come down? Does your mom, pops, like who can help you? Because I need you to know that, like, we've got 60% knee here on one leg, and I'm about to put him out there if you don't be serviceable. Yep. And then Jared Jackson goes out. Remind me on the name, but he goes out there and even with the little chip guy, just ducks under them.
Yep.
Dips under them.
Dips.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And as the easiest second, I'm like, I'm just glad that, like, it's bad enough when the defensive guys have time to assess how to not get a 15-yard penalty with the hit. Like, they had full sprint. They had enough time to assess, like, okay, so I'm free and clear. Now I just need to make sure I don't land on top of them, put my body weight on top of them, make sure it's a good form tackle, release properly. Like, that's how easy the sacks were coming.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Mahomes is going to go into this whole thing about footwork and you know, like, going back to the fundamentals. And it's like, we don't need to hear that going into a game against Buffalo.
Right.
So,
that's right.
Like, the guy doesn't trust it. Like, you could tell his feet were choppy. I mean, they're all over the place. So it's just fast. I don't know what they do. I mean, I just hope, you know, Wanya is good to go. He's still learning on the job, too. I mean, like, God bless him. He's such a nice guy to talk to. And you know, he's just like, hey, Mundy's good to go. I'm like, that's good, man. But, you know, just know that the future back there is Brett Veach gonna go draft the same three people he does every draft. Yep. I'm gonna go get a wide receiver. I'm gonna go get a lineman, and I'm gonna go get somebody else of need.
Probably a safety. Draft, I feel like there's usually a safety in there somewhere.
He always gets his cornerbacks in the late rounds. You know that.
That's true.
And some of them become studs. But he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go get an edge rusher. Like, I'm gonna do the same things every year. I'm like, you know, and just hope one of them sticks. And then some years they do. You know, but like. Yeah, because Xavier Worthy, the book is still out of him. Mm-hmm. Kingsley, the book is definitely not – the book is almost closed on that thing.
The book is not at the library currently. That book is getting late fees out right now.
That book's on the discount aisle right
now.
Yes. And Xavier, that book is still in progress. So, I mean, there's a lot there. I mean, Rashee Rice ain't coming through that door anymore.
No.
But how are you going to get it to him? It's like, they're like, well, it's not an explosive offense. I'm like, well, when you have 1.2 seconds to throw, it's not going to be an explosive offense.
Yeah.
That's just math. So, like, you got to figure out a way. And you lost your two tight ends that helped you really block.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Peyton Hendershot, I mean, you know, he's out there, but he's got to do special teams to block. And it's like, occasionally we'll give you one throw to be like, okay, you are a pass catcher, so
let's put that 88 to good use.
Yeah, he's 9-0.
I know
he's 9-0.
They're 9-0. We're talking about Peyton Hendershot and Donovan Smith, who's been on a couch since the parade. It really is hysterical in that way. But it's also the thing I wanted to ask you is, all right, it's like, what are you worried about now? What is the thing around this team?
Well, what are we not worried about? That's the better question.
And they're undefeated. They're undefeated. It's unbelievable. I'm not really worried about the defense. I'll say that. It wasn't ideal yesterday at times, and I'm going to talk about I'll talk about the corners a little more in a minute, but I think I continue to keep my faith in Spags.
Yeah, no, I mean, I keep thinking they're going to make a play at the end. I mean, technically, the Baltimore game, if it wasn't for a toe, they didn't make a play at the end.
Yep.
I mean, the Cincinnati game was a complete bailout. Yep. I mean, because the Baltimore thing is like, look, you know, there's ifs and buts. One thing about the Baltimore game is, like, even the guy who scores a touchdown, they still got to make a two-point conversion.
Yeah,
even
if
Tampa does decide to go for the two-point conversion, they still got to make the two-point conversion.
Yep.
I mean, the Cincinnati one is the only one who's like, all right, you legitimately got bailed out from a clear and obvious pass interference penalty on a fourth and very long. Like, that was bailout. But, I mean, we see the offense be put in those situations where they failed. Like, everybody keeps saying, like, oh, okay, we'll just, you know, let's have Patrick Mahomes do it. I'm like, the only reason they got that offensive series in overtime is, one, because they got the ball, but two, it's because they had pretty much tired out the Buck defense. So it's just a matter of just like, all right, just have Kareem go 4, 5, 6, 7 yards, get one to Hopkins on the corner, we're good. So, and then, I mean, we didn't even really get to really get into how much Pat Surtain, too. And DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, there is a battle out there.
I would like to see more of that battle. I don't mean one more time. I mean, like, 3 or maybe 5 more times.
That was fun.
Really good.
I mean, you could see after a while, like, Surtain was frustrating to the point where he took it too far and got a penalty at one point. It cost the penalty, too. But, that was fun to watch. I mean, you know, and it's like, all right, I'm just envisioning, like, ooh, Pat Surtain and Rashee Rice going forward at least the next 2 years. That'll be top notch. Because, I mean, Denver will make sure that he's paid. Yes. I would hope. These are, but, like, you know, always say, like, yeah, we forget sometimes the other guys get paid too. I mean, Denver's not bad.
No.
Like,
they might be a playoff team.
They're not. I mean, they're the 7th seed right now. They're not a bad football team. So, I mean, all things considered, like, they played pretty well. I thought Bo Nix did exactly what he needed to do. And, you know, like, nobody in Denver should be mad because at the end of the day, they scored 14 points.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he's in, like, Bo Nix has never seen a blitz before. So,
right.
Nick Bolton was like, yeah, you know, we've been working on that for a while. It's like, a double-A gap blitz?
Yes.
You've been working on that for a while?
We've been working on the quarterback turning his back to us.
Two linebackers go around the nose guard, and the guy just was like, oh, crap. Okay, sure. But, yeah, it was a fascinating game to watch. The sense that, like, I was like, everybody left like, hey, that was so exciting. I'm like, no, it wasn't. Like, you sure about that? I was not thrilled at anything. I was like, I'm sitting here like, boy, how many bad things can I write about today? This is going to be great. And then next thing I know, like, again, the circle back. Again, I was like, yep, I'm just going to write about one play. Cool.
It really is the joy of pulling out one of those games that you're not supposed to win, though, is because, like, we will and should spend a lot of time on all the things that didn't go well, but then you can always soothe that with a salve of undefeated 9-0, the only team in the AFC anywhere near the top of those standings. Obviously, the Lions still look pretty good on the other side, but it's an amazing place to be, and this show is obviously always on either on Monday nights or last week it was on Tuesday night, so we very rarely look ahead. But I wanted to mention something that Andy Reid said today. He seemed genuinely like he was in optimistic territory on Isaiah Pacheco, Charles Minshew, Juju Smith-Schuster. The former there would both have a 21-day ramp-up window that they could take advantage of, so I think even if they were activated this week, I would not expect to see either of them against Buffalo. Juju, who knows, he's still active. Which of those three guys do you think is going to have the biggest impact if and when they do return, even if it's not for Buffalo week?
I would say when Isaiah Pacheco returns, it's going to be the biggest impact. And the reason why is because as much as Kareem Hunt's done great, the steam's wearing down.
Yeah.
And you can tell. Yeah. He's not meant to be a feature guy. And, I mean, I think we figured out yesterday that – it was that yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday.
I know.
It feels like a long time ago. The noon game's
30 noon, off. Dude. That was 36 hours ago, right? Not yet?
Exactly. Yeah, we've reached the 24-hour rule. It's like, hey, we Why are we talking about this?
Yeah, on the Buffalo.
But no, it's I think they need that fresh. If that's the way they're going to operate, pound the rock, use your interior linemen, who are your best three players. If that's the way it's going to happen, you need some, no pun intended, pop in the backfield.
Yep.
And I think that's the way it's going to be. I mean, yes, the defense will welcome Omenihu with open arms, but, like, do we fully expect him to be, like, top-notch sack contributor when he gets back? No. Mm-hmm. I've always said for years, and you may notice when you tear an ACL, yeah, it's 1 year to recover, but it's also kind of another year mentally to recover.
Yeah.
So do I expect nothing except for him to periodically come in and make some big plays, which I really feel he will do? But that's about it. And then Juju, yeah, I mean, Juju is just going to add to the receiver depth. That's really what it's going to come. He's going to come in and, you know, he's not going to go 130 yards like he did against the Saints. And little did we know back then, I mean, they were playing the Saints version that was, like, worse than the Panthers Saints version. Woo! So, I think it's really just, if they're going to be a physical run team and you're going to carry that through December and January, you're going to need Isaiah Pacheco back, and I think that's going to be the best one that helps him.
Harold, we'll talk to you sometime in December or January when we need a little extra dose of physicality to keep this show moving. I appreciate you making the time for us tonight, with apologies to your photographer who did a lot of great work only to have it only zoomed in on the last 10 seconds of game time and a fun locker room atmosphere. I appreciate you joining us here, and we'll do it again soon.
Shout out to Brian Burkett, photographer there, man. Really good job. Thanks, Josh.
We do not give them enough credit. We do not say their names often enough because that is a hard job and a heavy camera.
Hard gig. Hard gig.
Shout out to the photographers around the KC sports media scene. Thank you, Harold.
All right, brother.
That's Harold Kuntz of Fox 4. You can see him right there on Channel 4 on your dial, or follow him on Twitter, website formerly known as Harold R. Kuntz 3, and you can see that post-game feature and everything else that he puts out. They do great work getting you ready for game time. They do great work all the time. I'm a big fan of that Fox 4 crew. But really, Harold's one of those pretty faces who's on the television screen. The real warriors are the ones lugging those cameras around and getting the shots that bring you that access to your TV. Here in radio, I mean, you know, we got some of the video stream stuff set up during the day, but here at radio tonight, there's no photographer, there's no videography, there's no camera. It's a miracle if I'm wearing pants for this show. Luckily for James, on the side of the glass, I am wearing pants.
Thank God.
Only pants. It's the Josh Briscoe Show, 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Thanks again to Harold Kuntz of Fox 4. I just love talking to Harold. He's a great dude. James and I were just talking in the break about some, like, you know, meeting people and knowing people in the industry and everything around here, and it really, I say this all the time, so maybe it sounds, maybe I'm protesting too much, but having gotten a chance to get to know a lot of these people over the last 5 to 10 years or so of doing a lot of this, we have such good people in Kansas City sports media. It's remarkable. And Harold is absolutely among the best of the best. We did talk to him for a long time, which means we're going to have shorter segments the rest of the way out, which is a risk I take. You know, I figured better for you to hear more from Harold than to just hear me for another a long chunk here. But I wanted to talk about another specific thing out of Chiefs Broncos that was like a legit huge question going into the game that was not perfect, but good enough that I don't hear and see a whole lot of people talking about it. On Tuesday's show, this is the Josh Briscoe Show, 96.5 The Fan. I am Josh Briscoe. Be weird if I wasn't, given the name of the show. I talked quite a bit on Tuesday. It was the evening after the trade deadline. I talked a lot about that Marshawn Lattimore trade and the Chiefs not making a move at cornerback. I'll save you the long ramp up, but obviously, Jalen Watson was CB2. He was playing great football, even better than I think the optimistic expectations would have delivered. Just truly fabulous start to the year for Jalen Watson, and he is now out for the year. Maybe there's a chance of like playoff-ish return, but you know, it's a real serious season-ending type of injury. Nazi Johnson gets concussed like a 15 to 20-ish snaps into his first game as a starter. And Joshua Williams has to take over, and then Joshua Williams gets the start and plays every defensive snap last week against the Buccaneers. Well, Nazi Johnson was back for the full week of practice this week, a great thing. And then he goes back out and starts and plays almost every snap yesterday against the Broncos on the outside. So your outside corners were Trent McDuffie and Nazi Johnson. Nazi Johnson is not as good right now as Jalen Watson has been. Just want to put that out there flatly. And Nazi Johnson yesterday, I think, was fine. He's kind of, it's kind of the performance you expect from your typical number two corner, or certainly from your number two corner who's actually your third corner trying to make it all work. Like, we've just been blessed and spoiled with great cornerback play here in recent years. And I think Nazi Johnson will get better as the season goes on because he has Steve Spagnuolo and he has Dave Merritt. Those guys get the best out of corners. It just always happens. Trent McDuffie, not a great game. Straight up cooked by Cortland Sutton at one instance. I am putting him in a bucket of players that had rough moments or rough performances who I'm not big picture worried about. We might get to a couple of those other guys in a little bit. Spoiler, one of them is Patrick Mahomes. I think he's going to be okay. This Mahomes fella, I'm buying his future still. Still think he could be a pretty good player. Give him time to develop. But I'm not worried about Trent McDuffie. He didn't, like, show something super exploitable. Sutton got a clean release opposite McDuffie, pressing him, and Sutton beat him. And he got beat a couple times. Rough to see, not the end of the world. The most interesting thing is the other cornerback position, and really right now, the third cornerback position. I mentioned earlier, I'm bad at remembering to tell people where I write now. You can read my work at ChiefsOnSI.com, and I'm going to do something special right now. I'm going to quote myself in a story that's not even out yet. Tomorrow morning on ChiefsOnSI.com, you'll see the story. I wrote it earlier, scheduled it, of course, about some snap count things. I write about the snap counts every week, because I think it's usually it's an interesting other way of kind of checking the box score on some things, but it's not about the box score. It's about when do the coaches trust you to be on the field and then how are they using you. So I like a box score check-in because it'll show, again, who is a core member, who's a rotational member, how are you going to feel out where these pieces all fit, etc. Here's what happened that was interesting yesterday. Joshua Williams, who played 67% of the defensive snaps in Week 8 and 100% of the snaps in Week 9. Joshua Williams was relegated all the way back down to 6 defensive snaps yesterday against the Broncos, 10% of the defensive snaps. Chris Roland Wallace, who has played 15, 31, and 22 of each of the previous 3 games, respectively. Chris Roland Wallace... James, you want to play the guess the number game for me? How many defensive snaps did undrafted rookie cornerback Chris Roland Wallace play yesterday? Reminding you that he played 15, 31, and 22 defensive snaps each of the 3 previous games. How many did he play yesterday?
Well, I'm going to go with, let's say 17.
Let's say 0.
Wow.
I would have been right in that neighborhood, even knowing that Johnson was coming back and knowing that Williams dropped off. Chris Roland Wallace was kind of becoming a little bit of a slot corner guy, right? They weren't putting him on the outside. They were saying, we'll get you in the slot when we want to have McDuffie on the outside. We're thinning out at corner here. So maybe Roland Wallace can be the new slot guy. He did not see the field on defense yesterday. I was as shocked by that as you were. So hold on. McDuffie plays every snap. Johnson plays almost every snap. Joshua Williams picks up the couple of snaps, presumably that Nazi Johnson missed. Chris Roland Wallace didn't play. Who played corner yesterday? I watched a football game. The Chiefs had corners. The Broncos frequently had wide receivers in the slot. Who played corner? Well, we're back to a conversation we were having in training camp, by and large, about Shamari Connor. Even with 6 snaps for Williams, 0 for Roland Wallace, the Chiefs did not play another true cornerback on Sunday. It was the 2 starters and then a little bit from Williams. Shamari Connor played 47 snaps. That's 81%. Not a huge outlier for him. He plays a lot. But on 47 snaps, Shamari Connor played a season-high 33 of those snaps in the slot, according to Pro Football Focus. He's not a great man coverage slot corner, but he is a tremendously useful, interesting, fascinating defensive back. I don't think this is their best case scenario, but if you said, okay, Josh, who are the Chiefs' five best defensive backs right now? I would not hesitate. Whatever order you want to put them in, it's Trent McDuffie, Nazee Johnson, Justin Reed, Brian Cook, Shamari Connor. No doubt in my mind, that's the top five. Jaden Hicks, another safety, might be next. He hasn't gotten a ton of work, but man, when he is on the field, you notice him and you find him, typically because he finds the football, and he is a thumper. All the Chiefs safeties are certified thumpers, by the way. They do not employ a non-thumping safety. Reed, Cook, Connor, and Hicks are a quartet of thumpers. But Shamari Connor was the answer at slot yesterday. I thought that was really interesting. Didn't end up burning the Chiefs. I think it's okay. I think it's something worth keeping an eye on, especially as teams continue to have success with their tight ends, teams that want to run three receivers. What are the Bills going to do next week coming up on Sunday? We'll see that as we go. But something to keep an eye on there. McDuffie and Johnson, your outside corners. Chris Rowland Wallace not getting any of the work. But Shamari Connor becomes your slot corner. Being the third safety on the field, comes up into the slot, he's your guy there. I'm willing to see it, willing to hear it out. Chris Rowland Wallace has not taken that job, obviously. Joshua Williams has not forced his way onto the field, so I don't hate this, but it certainly bears watching. I am not worried about Trent McDuffie in the long haul, but it is worth noting that was not a great game for him. But McDuffie, Johnson, Connor, I think that's the trio to watch going forward for the guys who are going to be out there in nickel packages for this Chiefs defense with Reed and Cook on the back end. We'll take a timeout, come back with more Josh Briscoe Show next on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
I talk too much and I've talked too long. Here's a really quick thing I teased earlier. Guys, I'm not worried about who almost blew it. Patrick Mahomes misses two touchdowns. It's okay. He's Patrick Mahomes. I think it'll be okay. Trent McDuffie, maybe his worst game as a pro. Still Trent McDuffie. I'm okay with it. The guy who should be thanking his lucky stars that Leo Chanel blocked that field goal at the end of the game is Harrison Butker. He doesn't miss kicks in clutch moments, so he's very rarely the object of ire for this team. But that kickoff that put the Broncos at the 40-yard line Look, Dave Tobe, I'm sure, called for it. He says Butker could kick a touchback at, you know, on command. So they were trying to gain a little field position in that exchange. I know the landing zone is a new thing. I know it's not a super huge portion of the field. You cannot miss the landing zone. You cannot let the Broncos start on their own 40 when all they need to do is get into field goal range. And then make the field goal after they get into field goal range. They did half of those things. I am also, to put them all in the same bucket, I'm also not big picture worried about Harrison Butker. He'll be fine. But that was a huge mistake that would have, like, it would have been a first segment topic on a lot of the shows today if the Chiefs would have given them the ball at the 40, then the Broncos march down the field, hit that field goal, and all of a sudden the Chiefs lose 17-16, and they have their first loss of the year. That would have needed to get more discussion. It was still a mistake. It was still a flub by Butker. But again, putting him in that bucket of guys I'm not terribly worried about because their resume should speak for itself at this point. But that does not avoid criticism because it was still a bad play. It was still a bad kick. It was still a mistake. I'm not worried about Mahomes, McDuffie, or Butker because their resumes speak for themselves. I am worried about this show ending on time because my resume speaks for itself. I'm long-winded. We're going to take another timeout and then come back and close up shop at the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to the Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Final segment of the night here on the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan, and I want to talk about a couple of teams who aren't the Kansas City Chiefs. One of them, they play next week. The other just played that team. I'm talking about the Bills and the Colts. I don't know why I said that like a riddle. I don't know why I'm making you work to try to guess the teams we're going to talk about. This is totally far afield from anything Chiefs related, but the Indianapolis Colts got tired of Anthony Richardson, and so they turned to Joe Flacco. Since doing that, the Colts have lost both of those games that Flacco has started. Shane Steichen has apparently already said that Flacco will start again next week. And they only lost by 10 to Buffalo yesterday in a game that I admittedly haven't got. I didn't get the track live at all because when the Chiefs are on, I'm not also doing Red Zone. I have the Chiefs on two TVs simultaneously because I need to be overstimulated, I think. I can set up a little. I have the one TV on the antenna and then the other TV on the internet delay. So I got kind of like a de facto 60-second delay replay. So I haven't seen how every bit of the Bills-Colts game went along, although I follow quite a few Bills folks across social media. So I saw a little bit of how some of those vibes went in a two-pick day for Josh Allen. But again, I can't pretend like I've gone through every snap of that. But back to the Colts briefly. I tweeted at the time that I didn't like or understand the move to bench Anthony Richardson for Joe Flacco because not only was I second-guessing this idea that Joe Flacco somehow gave the Colts a better chance to win and a better chance to make the playoffs, which so far he has not, I think that was in large part an overreaction to the way the Colts were playing. Anthony Richardson was throwing deep shots and not completing very many passes in general. But the thing about it that's so frustrating to me is that the Colts drafted Anthony Richardson, signed up for this experience, and then got halfway through the process and tried to eject. Bad process is how organizations get behind. Bad process, bad evaluation, no patience, everybody fighting and getting antsy for their jobs. If it's Chris Ballard or Shane Steichen, or both of them, GM and head coach of Indianapolis, Ballard, a former Chiefs guy, son on the Jayhawks, by the way, they should not feel good about their job status right now. And one of them needs to talk to the other one and figure out why the Anthony Richardson development plan, which was the word the entire time, he did not play very much college football. He has not played very much NFL football. Who decided they wanted out of that experience? It's bizarre to me. All of that to say, it's a little peek into where patient organizations and competent organizations separate from the organizations who get lost in the wilderness for a while. And I think the Colts are in danger of being in the wilderness for quite a bit because they drafted an unbelievably talented quarterback who needed an unbelievable amount of work, who needed games to work through and needed NFL experience. They're going to go back to him at some point. I hope it's sooner rather than later, but I do not understand how you misevaluate your team so poorly to also not even realize that Anthony Richardson makes your running game better. Not just him running it, but the threat of him being able to run the football. Joe Flacco is not raising your ceiling, and he hasn't raised your floor either. He threw three picks yesterday. What are you hiding from Anthony Richardson for? Anyway, all of that to me is deeply frustrating. Understanding even the Richardson pulling himself out of the game on third down because he was winded, that's a terrible look, and I'm good with that. Let him deal with that in the locker room. And if you want to sit him down for a game, I'm open there. This is ridiculous. And I'm a little bit jealous of Colts radio hosts, of Indianapolis radio hosts. And I'm also very glad I'm not one right now. Because it's a great thing to put on a tee, but I'd be pulling my hair out right now if I was a fan or an analyst of that team. To Buffalo, though. This game on Sunday is a really big deal. We very rarely preview it. And again, I'm going to have to go back and rewatch Bills-Colts to, prep throughout this week and everything. But this game matters in a big way for Buffalo. It sounds like Amari Cooper may be back. He and Coleman already ruled out. I'm not doing this completely on who needs it more. I don't think that's going to get you to a smart answer or smart process very often. But this game means so much more to Buffalo than it does to Kansas City. It's almost hard to evaluate. It's true a lot of times for Chiefs games where the other team is preparing for their Super Bowl, and for the Chiefs, it's Sunday. But in Buffalo, it's going to be the game of the week. And if you're the Bills, you're a two-loss AFC team that absolutely must have this game to have a chance for the one seed. And if you're the Chiefs, this game could pretty much not not legally and not mathematically, but could effectively end the race for the one seed. The Chiefs won't play anybody the rest of the way who's seriously contending for that until they get to Pittsburgh on Christmas. The Texans the week before, still a competent football team, but they're not really in the mix for that any longer. And Pittsburgh will get to Pittsburgh if they haven't run out of magic by Christmas time. I think they might not. Steelers are legit frisky. But this game means a lot to Buffalo. It would be great for the Chiefs to win it. But as we sit here on Monday, I'm second-guessing myself. I never thought the Chiefs would go undefeated. I didn't have them going 17-0 before the year. I didn't think they'd be undefeated after, you know, week four. I don't think they're going to be undefeated here after week 10. But I am curious if they've talked about it in that locker room. Staying undefeated, ending the race for the one seed, and launching themselves so alone to the top of the NFL. They're already there, but beating Buffalo on Sunday would really be a hell of a way to lock that thing up. I don't know yet, though. We'll have to make a pick later in the week. In the meantime, you've listened to the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan. For James Howell, I'm Joshua Briscoe. Bye, Mom!
You're listening to the Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.